Welcome, everybody, to Productivity Book Group. I'm your host and facilitator, Ray Sidney Smith. Thanks for joining us here on the live call or on the podcast for Productivity Book Group. On this call, we will be discussing Talent is Overrated, What Really Separates World-Class Performers from Everybody Else by Jeff Colvin. This is the first six chapters that we'll be discussing. And Jeffrey Colvin is he's a senior editor-at-large for Fortune magazine. And oddly enough, he's actually also the brother of Sean Colvin, the singer. Your songwriter, which is quite interesting to me. We'll be discussing Talent is Overrated, the first six chapters, which covers really this understanding of high performance and what really makes high performers perform. And so we're covering the first six chapters that goes over, you know, his premise that talent is overrated. Obviously, we're going to talk about what makes up that sort of concept, and then we'll get into his discussion of what deliberate practice is and what it isn't, and then we'll cover the second half of the book in our next call. So I just wanted to kick it off and see what people's general impression was of the current reading selection. Do you like Jeff's writing? Do you like the concept? What were your initial thoughts?
This is Margaret. I like it a lot. I had read it originally about 3 years ago, I think. So this was a reread for me. I like his premise. It's kind of mind-blowing in a lot of ways. And I'm finding more stuff in it the second time through.
Oh, that's great.
And I thought he was dead on, totally with the premise of deliberate practice is completely accurate.
So let's get into the thought here about Colvin talks about the idea that talent is something of a myth. That is, that we have this idea of talent being innate, immutable, and those who have it, and those who don't. And so it sounds like at least the both of you are in agreement with that. And what are some of the challenges you face when people think that talent is something that's unattainable for them? And then on the flip side, how do we deal with some of the more challenging aspects of what Colvin's talking about? Because you see a basketball player who's 6'7" or taller, and clearly they have a natural ability to overcome me on a basketball court, and I'm not short. I'm 6'2", but there's a still reality factor. When someone has 5 inches on you, they're gonna have some advantages on the basketball court. So what does that mean when it comes to natural abilities and potentially genetic abilities and the idea of talent being something that is not fixed?
I thought it was really interesting how he made the distinction that, like you're saying, there are some physical limitations, like that if you're 7 feet tall, you're not likely to be an Olympic gymnast. The body mechanics aren't going to work. But
right.
That outside of those physical limitations, there really aren't a lot of things that are predetermined in terms of what we can accomplish. And I think, I think more than just the really, gross obvious ones like 7 feet tall in gymnastics or 5 feet tall and being an NFL linebacker, I think there's some things with, joint structures and things like that might make golfing more difficult for other people, for different people or things like that. I mean, there's some specific physical things that may even be at a fairly subtle level. But in terms of mental skills, and I think there's really no limit as long as people are willing to put in the work and do the right kind of work on it.
Right, and I would agree. I think that there's a subtle difference between those things that are potentially genetic advantages, let's call them that, whether that be intellect, IQ, or some kind of physical quotient, some kind of athletic quotient that gives you, as you said, better joint structure, more muscle development, some kind of metabolic ability, for runners and all those kinds of things. Those still don't stand as a testament to those people who do really become the top level performers. And he gives the examples of Tiger Woods and Amadeus Mozart and these folks who, you know, for all intents and purposes, their genetic makeup and predisposition toward golf or to piano wasn't necessarily the thing that led them to top level performance. It was really the fact that they did this thing called deliberate practice. And they may not have known what that was.
And it's really a question of who their parents were.
Right. Yeah, Leopold.
When I read this the first time, sorry for continuing on.
No, go for it. Go for it.
When I read this the first time, something that really brought it home to me, I've got a really good friend whose high school age daughter plays competitive softball and can't read a book to save her life. I mean, she reads some, but she doesn't enjoy reading at all. And we were talking about this book, and I said, you know, if your daughter was born to me and my husband, same kid, you know, if we could do same genetics even somehow, I said she wouldn't be playing competitive softball, but she'd be staying up all night reading because we would have stuck a book in her hand from the moment she was, you know, barely mobile, whereas they would have naturally, because her husband was an athlete and she was a competitive athlete in high school, they naturally played with her with balls, you know, from a very early age. And my friend started laughing. She said, you know, you're right, we did. You know, so it wasn't even conscious on their part, but just the ways that they chose to interact with their daughter when she was really little were all around balls and hitting things and, you know, of more athletic things as opposed to more sitting and reading a book kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Miranda, you had a thought?
I think, as has been pointed out, I completely agree that the modeling is crucial, and it's a tragic. So for those households that don't have access to certain types of education or certain opportunities, because it doesn't just impact that, it impacts future generations, because as the parents model, children do. And if there's no modeling or no engagement at an early age, then, you know, it really curtails the abilities that person, or not the abilities, but the things that they will manifest in their later life are going to be altered, drastically later down, you know, as they become adults. And the second thing, I think it's a hopeful view, because I think you mentioned earlier what were the challenges of you know, the talent-based view. And I occasionally teach piano, and so it allows my students to give up quicker because they'll say, I'm not talented, especially when it gets harder and they have to work and they don't want to work, and they'll say, well, I just can't do this. And I'm like, yes, you can. So it's a hopeful view. I prefer it to people, and I have heard musicians that, you know, say, well, you know, kind of take pride in the fact that they're musicians and want to distinguish themselves from people who are not, and so they kind of encourage that talent-based thing because it makes them special and other people not, but really it isn't. And, you know, so it's more hopeful, and it says, look, you can do this too. You just have to, as Margaret said, put in the work.
Right. I think it's very similar to those in music who believe that there's such a thing as tone deafness, you know, and you know, the science has clearly shown that people just need to be trained to know what those tones are. I mean, if you have the sense of hearing, you are not tone deaf. There's no such thing. There's a lack of skill in being able to discern the tones, but after you have learned it, you can indeed do that. And in the case of like the Chinese language, where, you know, there are certain tones in the Chinese language that you can't actually create or distinguish without having been born into the language, that's a whole different ballgame, because that just requires a level of skill that, you know, is beyond our abilities once we're really adults. But, you know, I think it's really important for us all to remember that, you know, talent is no matter what side I look at it this from this perspective, no matter what side of the talent argument you're on, if you're not trying, then you're never going to get anywhere. You know, like why stick your head in the sand and say, oh, you know, or you know, just stop trying to put in the hard work to become better in, you know, like knowing that there's an ability always to improve. You know, so whether or not the talent argument is correct or not, and I think there's some arguments, good science, against deliberate practice in some arenas, there is a whole host of evidence showing that, you know, we're and maybe there are some of you out there who are trying to become world-class golfers, but I'm not trying to become a world-class golfer, but I know that I can use some of these tools to be able to go out on the links and do better in the areas that I'm weak. And, you know, that doesn't mean I'm ever going to sign up to become, you know, to go head-to-head with any of the great golfers out there, but I know that I can improve my practice by being able to take some of these, you know, taking this perspective into my overall being.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about what you were discussing, Miranda, about sort of setting up generations for either success or failure by virtue of the legacy that a parent passes on to their children by virtue of what they want them to do. I find it really fascinating because I see it in my own family with, you know, my dad wanting you know, some of the children to pass on the family, you know, to sort of take on the family, you know, profession, if you want to call it that. And it's really fascinating to me to see this subtle sort of movement, you know, over the course of years and years and years, decades, of really trying to make this happen. And, you know, children by nature reject, you know, sometimes their parents' desires, and others embrace it. And so I'm curious, do you have thoughts about how that parent-child paradigm sort of works, especially as it relates to wanting to pass along these types of skills?
Actually, no. I've got it in the reverse. So no, I can't speak to that.
Margaret, do you have any thoughts?
And I wonder, and this is all hypothetical because I don't have kids, but I wonder how much of it is deliberate and how much of it is just circumstantial, sort of. I mean, like when my friends were new parents, they weren't thinking, we want her to be a professional softball player, so we are going to school her towards this. You know, it was just more of an emphasis on physical stuff that then as she explored and tried gymnastics and didn't like that and tried a few other things and then landed on softball, it's something that she really enjoyed doing. Whereas if it was someone being pushed, like you think of some of the stories of like Olympic gymnasts where it's the parents' goal and they're pushed and pushed and pushed. You know, I'm not sure that I would have wanted to be any of those kids.
Well, doesn't the author talk about that chess master who had three daughters and the youngest was the one who performed the highest and she was the one who
seemed
to like it. The middle girl is the one who's like, I don't care for chess, but you guys are making me play it. And she really never achieved the level of, you know, I think there has to be an internal motivation as well, regardless of whether or not it's something that you're encouraged to do by your parents, just based on what he talks about, those, you know, the levels that those three girls achieved on their own.
Yeah, and when they got into their 20s, they were like, there's more to life than chess. Yeah.
Absolutely. There is more to life than chess. And I actually happen to love chess, but I do know that there is something better to life than chess. And so, yeah, I think you're both onto something here. You know, I think about I think about my own experience, you know, loving books, loving reading. I know that my mother is a prolific and avid reader, and I never connected her, at least growing up, I never connected her desire to read with my own. I
mm-hmm.
felt like I gravitated toward books, and you know, and I was a fairly athletic child as well. You know, I'd always been in martial arts and then track and field, and so I've always been a pretty athletic person. But those have never been the things that people really paid attention to about me. They always really paid attention to my academic skills, and I'm always curious about that. I guess because, you know, I'm a 6'2" slender person, and people don't particularly think of you as being, you know, a world class athlete when you're scrawny. But the interesting part is that I never saw the connection, and I don't believe that my mother actually ever really